I know what time it is. It's time to start the Panic Podcast for this Wednesday. It's the middle of the week. It's the 27th of May in the year of our Lord, 2026. It's a foggy day here in Wise County. It's never going to stop raining. It's going to rain until I'm a decrepit old man. How will I make it? There's no sunshine. I don't know what I'm going to do. I know exactly what I'm going to do, actually. We're going to read Daniel chapter 2. That's what we're going to look at. Daniel chapter 2. And look at verse 44. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms and bring them to an end, but will itself endure forever. Daniel chapter 2. Fascinating chapter. And that's what we're looking at today. My name is Mike, and I'm your online Bible study buddy. Yeah, there's no end in sight for the rain. Looks like for the rest of the week, it's going to be pretty dismal. Next week's going to be a little bit nicer, a little cooler than it should be, but at least the rains will stop. I have a little flood going on in my basement, in my laundry room. Every time we get a lot of rain, I get a little tiny junior Mississippi down there. That's the cross I have to bear. That's right. Well, the book of Daniel, we're in chapter 2. The book of Daniel opens a window into one of the most dramatic epics of biblical history, the Babylonian exile. Now, let's see. In 605 BC, Nebuchadnezzar, king of the Neo-Babylonian Empire, besieged Jerusalem and deported a group of promising young Judean nobles, including Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Now, these teenagers were thrust into the very heart of Babylonian culture. They were trained in the language, the literature, and the wisdom of the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, for 3 years before entering royal service. Now, Nebuchadnezzar held the throne from 605 to 562 BC. Remember, we're in BC, so the years go backwards. And he transformed Babylon into the dominant superpower of the Near East through military conquests, massive building projects, including the famous Hanging Gardens of Babylon, and a highly sophisticated administrative system. It's hard to imagine how powerful Babylon had become. It's hard to imagine the size of this kingdom. And the events of Daniel 2 unfold in the second year of his reign. If you look at Daniel 2 verse 1, I like the book of Daniel because it often gives us a starting point to, in terms of world history. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled and he could not sleep. So this places the story shortly after Daniel's training, when he and his friends were already serving in the king's court. Now, dreams held deep significance to the ancients, especially in Babylonian society. Kings would consult professional diviners, magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers, the wise men or the Chaldeans. And they would use sophisticated omen lists, astrological charts, ritual incantations, things like that, to interpret dreams and visions. And these so-called experts formed the intellectual and religious backbone of the empire, advising the king on everything from military campaigns to daily devotions. But in this chapter, human wisdom reaches its limit, and the God of Israel steps in dramatically. Now, Daniel 2 records the first major prophetic vision in the book, and the only chapter written in Aramaic, not Hebrew, but Aramaic, signaling its universal message to the Gentile world. There are three core truths in chapter 2. Let me give them to you now before we get started. The first core truth, the futility of pagan wisdom, or we would say maybe today worldly wisdom, apart from God. Secondly, the power of faithful prayer. And thirdly, the ultimate sovereignty of God over every human empire. Now, the chapter divides naturally into the outline of our study here today, culminating in a breathtaking prophecy of four successive kingdoms crushed by an eternal divine kingdom. So let's get started. Yeah, that was the introduction. Let's get started with reading verses 2 to 13 of Daniel 2. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means." The astrologers answered the king, "May the king live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will interpret it." The king replied to the astrologers, "This is what I have firmly decided." I tell you, Nebuchadnezzar was a tricky guy. He said, "If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses burned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it to me, you will receive from me the gifts and rewards of great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me." Once more they replied, "Let the king tell his servants the dream, and then we will interpret it." The king answered, "I'm certain that you're trying to gain time, because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there's only one penalty for you. You've conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. So then, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me." The astrologers answered the king, "There's not a person on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among human beings." This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death, and men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends to put them to death. So the chapter begins with, deep inner turmoil. And everybody dreams, so they say. I don't ever remember my dreams, but I'm assuming that I do dream. But the ancients viewed dreams as messages from the gods. And Nebuchadnezzar's anxiety tells us something much bigger than a nightmare was bothering him. He called for the wise men, literally the full roster of the Babylonian occult and scholarly elites. Now, these men were not con artists or charlatans in the modern sense. They, in fact, represented the pinnacle of Mesopotamian learning, trained in cuneiform tablets containing dream omen collections dating back many, many centuries. The king demanded the impossible from these men. He basically wanted them to do two things: recount the dream to him, and then tell him what the dream means. The stakes were as high as they go. Verses 5 and 6, "This is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what my dream was and interpret it, I will have you cut into pieces and your houses turned into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards of great honor." For a handful of verses, the wise men protest, and finally they admitted that it was helpless. They literally could not do what the king asked. Verse 10 and 11, "There's no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans." You know, their confession is desperate, but it's also historically telling. Babylonian divination relied on the dreamer supplying the details, because their belief was no god and no ritual were believed to reveal both the content and the meaning on demand. Nebuchadnezzar's odd request revealed the fraudulence of the whole system. And in his anger, he ordered the execution of all the Babylonian wise men. And Daniel and his friends were caught up in this order. Historically, this kind of brutality was very common. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar had already destroyed Jerusalem and the temple and deported many, many thousands. Absolute monarchs like him wielded life and death power without due process. The whole scene here teaches us a number of timeless truths. First of all, never underestimate the limits of secular or worldly expertise. You know, we live in an age of AI. Are you getting as sick and tired of hearing about AI as I am? Talk about the most overhyped thing in the world, AI. But we have AI today. They're consultants, experts, men and women with specialized credentials. But today, as in Nebuchadnezzar's, there's no one on earth who can reveal the ultimate mysteries. And second, and I think this is pretty significant, because I believe that we're seeing this happening in our own day and age, God often allows crises to dismantle false and corrupt systems, whether those things are in government, in education, workplaces, or even personal idols, so that he, and he alone, gets the glory. Third, even in hostile environments, believers can trust God's time to be perfect. The death decree that Daniel and his friends get caught up in sets the stage for God to intervene. You know, Christians dealing with unreasonable bosses or supervisors, cultural pressure, or impossible demands should remember Daniel's calm wisdom, which we'll see later on in the chapter. Panic is never the answer when heaven's king is on your side. Well, God gives Daniel his own vision, verses 14 to 23. Let's read those. "When Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, 'Why did the king issue such a harsh decree?' Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel." So Daniel didn't have a clue what had precipitated this, his being put to death. "At this, Daniel went in to the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, Praise be to the name of the God, of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He disposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You've given me wisdom and power. You've made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. Well, Daniel then boldly requests an audience with the king and secures a postponement with the promise that he will interpret the dream. You know, this is really remarkable and courageous from, you know, on the side of this young Jewish exile. Daniel did what every believer ought to do when confronted with an impossible situation. They went straight to prayer. And that night, the text tells us that the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Now, this, of course, at this point in the story, we have no idea what the contents of the vision were, but we know Daniel's response helped, heartfelt praise. And his prayer, I think, is one of the most beautiful doxologies in the entire Bible. It really echoes the historical reality that Nebuchadnezzar had deposed Judah's kings and literally changed the times of God's people. And yet Daniel in his prayer affirmed that the true sovereign God controls all history. Only God, only Yahweh, can reveal what pagan gods and wise men can't. Precisely because he dwells in unapproachable light. And I'll tell you what, we Christians, we must cultivate both personal intimacy with God and corporate prayer times into our lives. You know, when facing a dire situation, for goodness sakes, don't keep it to yourself. Gather believing friends and pray. And Daniel also models some humility here as he credits God entirely, not his own human intellect. Verse 30, later on in the story, says, "As for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because I have greater wisdom than anyone else alive, but so that your majesty may know the interpretation, and that you may understand what went through your mind." Something else before we move on. One scholar noted, and I thought this was interesting too, that praise must precede proclamation. Daniel's great prayer or song of thanksgiving prepared him, you know, gave him the strength to stand before the king without fear. You, if you're a believer listening to this, you're facing some anxiety, you ought to memorize these verses because they resonate the heart toward the God alone who changes the times and the seasons. Well, let's read Daniel's interpretation. It's verses 24 to 49. Armed with the revelation, Daniel moves quickly to stop the executions, and he is rushed before the king. Arioch claims the credit. He says, "I have found a man." I love that. "I have found a man." But Daniel gives God the glory. Look at verses 27 and 28. Daniel replied, "No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mystery he has asked about. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. Your dream and the visions that passed through your mind as you were lying in bed are these." And then Daniel recounts the dream exactly, apparently, as the king remembered it. Now, we'll just summarize it here. there was a colossal statue in the dream, a head of gold with the chest and arms of silver, with belly and thighs of bronze, and with legs of iron, with feet partly iron and partly baked clay. In the dream, this great big rock, cut out not by human hands, strikes the statue, the feet, shattering the entire image into powder that the wind blows away. And the rock becomes a mountain filling the earth. Now, it's interesting to me. I don't find that, that dream's not particularly nightmarish to you, to me. Is it, does it seem like a nightmare to you? But apparently it scared Nebuchadnezzar to death. So Daniel is going to interpret the dream. Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. He is, quote, the king of kings, to whom God has granted dominion of the earth. Well, after Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian Empire will rise another kingdom that will be inferior to Babylon. Silver. Historically, this was the Medo-Persian Empire that existed from 539 to 331. Then a third kingdom will come to power, a bronze kingdom. Well, that's Greece under Alexander the Great and his successors. That's from 331 to 63 BC. And then finally, a fourth kingdom will arise, which according to the interpretation is as strong as iron. That's Rome, which conquered Greece and survived until 476 AD in the West. The feet of iron and clay, this mixture, represent a divided and unstable phase. The interpretation says partly strong and partly brittle. The people will be a mixture and will not remain united. Many scholars see this fulfilled in the fragmented European states after Rome's fall, with repeated failed attempts at reunification under like Charlemagne Napoleon, or even the EU today. But verse 44 is the key. Now listen, here's verse 44. In the time of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will it be left to other people. It will crush all those kingdoms and will bring them to an end, but it will itself endure forever. The rock in the vision is God's eternal kingdom, established by the Lord Jesus Christ at his first coming. You know, the church basically advancing through the centuries. All those nations beginning with Babylon, ending with Rome, all those nations rise and fall. And yet, you know, the God's kingdom remains. And God's kingdom will be consummated at his return when every earthly power will be pulverized. This dream's fulfillment, it's amazing, has unfolded precisely across 2,500 years of human history, proving its divine origin. And Nebuchadnezzar's response is amazing. The text tells us that he, quote, fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honors. And he orders incense and offerings. And he makes this incredible declaration in verse 47. Nebuchadnezzar said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings, and the revealer of mysteries, for you are able to reveal this mystery." And Daniel is promoted to be ruler over the entire province of Babylon, and chief of the wise men. And at Daniel's request, his friends are given prominent positions in state government. I mean, it's an amazing thing, and it's an amazing statue. Now, this is going to come into play later on in the book of Daniel. So you need to just file chapter 2 away, particularly this dream, because we're going to talk about it again in a few weeks. For you and I today, this chapter is more than just interesting trivia, or it's more than just an amazing prophecy that has come to pass and will come to pass, the end of it. There are some powerful truths here. First of all, we are to live boldly and humbly at the same time. You can do that, by the way. You can be bold and humble at the same time. Even as we live in a kind of exile of our own, in a culture that often feels foreign and hostile. Yet God can elevate faithful servants to influence presidents and CEOs and even neighbors if we give him all the glory. Second, hope for the future is fuel for today. You know, empires rise and fall with amazing predictability, as this dream proves. Rome did. So will modern superpowers. But, quote, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed. In election years, during wars or economic upheavals, this truth frees us from despair or the idolatry of politics. Third, bold, courageous, God-centered witness can greatly influence even the most powerful. You know, Daniel didn't soften his message one bit. He declared judgment on earthly kingdoms, including Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. Our evangelism must do the same. We must proclaim things like the reality of hell, but also Christ's eternal reign. The main thrust of Daniel chapter 2, the big, big point, is that God is sovereign over human history. He is sovereign over dreams and kings and crises, from the courts of Babylon to our smartphones and superpower world. The message remains unchanged. Human empires, human nations, human kingdoms, they are temporary. Nothing lasts forever. God's kingdom is eternal. So Christians today need to be, number one, prioritizing prayer in crisis, both private prayer, but also like with a believing community in your church. We must also be trusting God's control when our political leaders seem to be irrational, or when the systems all around us begin to collapse. We also need to be witnessing with wisdom and tact, giving God all the glory. We also must be living with an eternal perspective. And remember, regardless of what's going on in our own country, our citizenship, our true citizenship, is in the mountain that fills the earth. And we also need to be embracing humility and generosity when God promotes us. In other words, don't get the big head when good things start happening in your life. For goodness sakes, wise up and give the glory to God. Well, it's precisely 30 minutes past the hour, time to call it a day. Hey, thank you so much for listening to the Panic Podcast today. Lord willing, and all things being equal, we'll be back here on Friday. Until then, have a great rest of the week. Be sure to join us tonight if you're in the Wise County, Virginia area for our big Bible study. 60 minutes of solid biblical teaching and really entertaining discussion. 1230 Church Street Northwest in the hustling, bustling metropolis of Norton, Virginia. We'll be looking for you. But have a great rest of the week. As I say, we'll see you back here on Friday. Once again, thank you for listening to the Panic Podcast. We'll talk again soon.